A year on, four ways Trump's tariffs have changed the global economy. 1 year into Donald Trump's second-term trade war, the structural break between the world's two largest economies is no longer theoretical, it is quantifiable, accelerating, and largely irreversible. U.S. imports from China plunged roughly 30% in 2025, while American exports to China fell more than 25%, collapsing Beijing's share of U.S. imports to below 10% for the first time since 2000. What began as tariff brinkmanship has hardened into a wholesale rewiring of global supply chains, with profound implications for capital allocation, geopolitical risk pricing, and the viability of North American manufacturing reshoring. The question for institutional investors is no longer whether decoupling will happen, it is how to position for the second-order effects now rippling through Mexico, Vietnam, and the emerging non-aligned middle powers that stand to capture redirected trade flows. Trump's Liberation Day tariffs in April 2025 triggered an initial shock that sent U.S.-China tariff rates spiraling into triple digits and brought bilateral trade to a temporary standstill. By year-end, Chinese goods faced tariffs 20 percentage points higher than at the start of 2025, pushing the average effective U.S. tariff rate to roughly 10%, up from approximately 2.5% a year earlier. The immediate market reaction obscured the deeper structural shift. Chinese goods, which represented more than 20% of U.S. imports in 2016 when Trump first took office, had collapsed to sub-minus 10% penetration by December 2025, a level not seen in a quarter century. Davin Kaur, professor and globalization chair at Dartmouth University's Tuck School of Business, characterized the shift as very dramatic and very decisive, noting that the scale of change suggests companies acted on contingency plans already in development. His assessment, even if Trump moderates his most aggressive levies, the trade relationship will not revert to prior norms. "I don't think you should expect things to go back to business as usual," Kaur stated. The implications extend beyond bilateral trade volumes. Despite tariffs, U.S. imports rose more than 4% in 2025, indicating not isolation but redirection. The share of U.S. imports sourced from Vietnam and Mexico increased materially, with evidence that Chinese firms boosted investments in those jurisdictions to circumvent direct tariffs. This is not simply trade diversion, it is the embryonic stage of a parallel supply chain architecture optimized for geopolitical hedging rather than cost efficiency alone. The non-aligned trade bloc emerges. The rewiring of global trade is creating winners and losers outside the U.S.-China dyad with unusual speed. The U.K., which faced a relatively modest 10% tariff on goods, saw the U.S. share of its exports decline even as Germany, France, and Poland gained ground. Canada, despite being largely exempted from tariffs under North American free trade provisions, slashed tariffs on Chinese-made electric vehicles from 100% to roughly 6.1%, a sharp pivot that undercuts U.S. automakers' long-standing dominance in the Canadian market. June Du, economics professor at Aston University, summarized the dynamic: "Global trade as a whole has held up quite well, but there's a lot of rewiring. That rewiring is not random. Countries are actively de-risking exposure to U.S. policy volatility by diversifying trade partners, even at the cost of economic efficiency. The Trump administration did extract some concessions intended to open foreign markets to U.S. goods, particularly agricultural products. But the broader geopolitical cost is mounting." Petros Mavroidis, professor at Columbia Law School, argued that the damage stems not from tariff levels themselves but from the unilateralism of U.S. policy. That unilateralism is now constraining U.S. leverage in unrelated areas. Canadian travel to the U.S. fell 20% in 2025, costing the American economy more than $4 billion, according to the U.S. Travel Association. Trade tensions have complicated U.S. efforts to rally allied support on issues ranging from the Iran conflict to the extension of a 28-year ban on tariffs for electronic transactions, including streaming services. The risk of retaliatory escalation remains contained but not negligible. Michael Pierce, economist at Oxford Economics, noted that while direct trade retaliation has been limited, Trump's stance has emboldened other nations to explore protectionist measures of their own. "That's the significant risk, that over time we do start to see that retaliation in other ways," Pierce said. "That's how damage from the trade war can spread." Domestic contradictions, revenue without revival, the domestic economic promises Trump tied to his tariff regime have largely failed to materialize. U.S. manufacturing spent much of 2025 in contraction, and foreign direct investment into the U.S. declined despite pledges from pharmaceutical companies and other sectors to boost capital expenditures. The tariff revenue haul, initially a political selling point, became a legal liability in February 2026 when the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the Liberation Day duties, putting the government on the hook to return more than half of the $260 billion collected in 2025. That refund obligation creates a fiscal overhang at a moment when inflationary pressures from energy disruptions are resurfacing. The Iran-US confrontation over the Strait of Hormuz, which handles roughly one-fifth of global energy shipments, has pushed Brent crude prices above $110 per barrel. The intersection of trade policy and energy geopolitics is compounding cost pressures for U.S. consumers and manufacturers alike. Key risk: the Supreme Court ruling invalidating $130 billion in tariff collections exposes the fragility of executive trade authority and raises the cost of capital for any U.S. industrial policy predicated on tariff-funded subsidies. Capital allocation and a fragmented trade order. The investment implications of the U.S.-China decoupling are both direct and structural. Direct exposures are straightforward. Companies with concentrated China sourcing or sales face margin compression and supply chain reconfiguration costs. The structural implications are less obvious but more consequential. First, Mexico and Vietnam are not simply beneficiaries of trade diversion, they are becoming platforms for Chinese capital seeking tariff arbitrage. Institutional investors should scrutinize the ownership structures and component sourcing of manufacturing assets in these jurisdictions. A Mexican assembly plant with Chinese equity backing and Chinese intermediate goods may face political risk in a second wave of tariff enforcement targeting transshipment. Second, the collapse of Chinese import share from 20% to sub-minus 10% over 9 years represents an annualized decline of roughly 7%, but the steepest drop occurred in 2025 alone. That velocity suggests a phase transition, not a linear trend. If Chinese firms are investing in third-country production hubs, the next frontier for U.S. tariff policy will be rules of origin enforcement and scrutiny of ultimate beneficial ownership. This will raise compliance costs and create openings for legal and consulting services, customs brokerage, and supply chain visibility software. Third, the erosion of U.S. soft power, measured in declining allied travel, stalled multilateral negotiations, and reduced trade policy coordination, has no direct line item in equity valuations. But it degrades the premium investors traditionally assign to U.S.-domiciled assets for regulatory predictability and rule of law stability. The tariff refund mandate is a case in point. Retrospective invalidation of $130 billion in government collections introduces a sovereign execution risk previously associated with emerging markets, not the United States. The Plaquemines view: the decoupling of U.S.-China trade is the dominant macro fact of 2026, and the market is systematically underpricing its permanence. The 30% year-over-year import collapse is not a policy lever that will be reversed by a change in administration or a diplomatic thaw. It reflects multi-billion-dollar capital investments in alternative supply chains that cannot be unwound without destroying sunk costs. We are witnessing the end of the Washington consensus on trade liberalization and the beginning of a multipolar trade architecture organized around geopolitical blocks rather than comparative advantage. The second-order effect is a bifurcation in capital markets. U.S. and Chinese equities will increasingly trade as separate asset classes with minimal correlation, much like how U.S. and Soviet industrial production were structurally decoupled during the Cold War. For institutional allocators, this means portfolio construction must account for geopolitical scenario analysis, not just sector and factor exposures. A diversified global equity portfolio in 2020 assumed integrated supply chains. A diversified portfolio in 2026 must assume fragmented ones. The near-term trade is clear: overweight Mexico, Vietnam, and Southeast Asian manufacturing platforms with demonstrated ability to absorb Chinese FDI while maintaining tariff-free or reduced tariff access to U.S. markets. Underweight pure-play China exporters and U.S. firms with significant China revenue exposure that have not yet pivoted. The medium-term trade is subtler, positioned for a regime in which trade policy is a tool of statecraft, not economics, and in which the predictability premium historically accorded to U.S. assets erodes as executive unilateralism becomes normalized. The Supreme Court tariff reversal is a warning shot. Investors can no longer assume that U.S. trade policy is legally durable or fiscally sound. The Canada EV tariff cut to 6.1% is a preview of what comes next. U.S. allies will not openly defy Washington, but they will quietly diversify away from dollar-denominated trade dependence and U.S. supply chain reliance. The loser is not just bilateral trade volume. It is the structural demand for dollar reserves and U.S. Treasury securities that has underwritten American fiscal flexibility for decades. Trump's tariffs may yet succeed in reshoring some manufacturing capacity, but the cost will be measured in geopolitical capital, not customs revenue. The bottom line: the first year of Trump's second-term tariff regime has accomplished something no amount of diplomatic rhetoric could. It has made U.S.-China decoupling an operational reality rather than a policy aspiration. Chinese import share has collapsed to levels unseen in 25 years, trade flows are rewiring toward Mexico and Vietnam, and U.S. allies are hedging their exposure to American unilateralism by diversifying trade partners, even at the cost of economic efficiency. Manufacturing has not revived, tariff revenue is being clawed back by court order, and the soft power erosion is constraining U.S. leverage in conflicts from Iran to electronic trade agreements. For institutional capital, the playbook is no longer about optimizing cost arbitrage in a globalized supply chain. It is about positioning for a fragmented trade order in which geopolitics determines market access, compliance costs are rising, and the legal durability of trade policy is in question. The winners will be firms and investors who treat trade policy as a source of alpha, not a background assumption. The losers will be those who assume the 2020 playbook still applies in 2026. It does not.